I'm Erin Holt, and this is the Functional Nutrition Podcast, where we lean into intuitive functional medicine. We look at how diet, our environment, our emotions, and our beliefs all affect our physical health. This podcast is your full-bodied, well-rounded resource. I've got over a decade of clinical experience, and because of that, I've got a major bone to pick with diet culture and the conventional healthcare model. They're both failing so many of us. But functional medicine isn't the panacea that it's made out to be either. We've got some work to do, and that's why creating a new model is my life's work. I believe in the ripple effect, so I founded the Functional Nutrition Academy, a school and mentorship for practitioners who want to do the same. This show is for you if you're looking for new ways of thinking about your health and you're ready to be an active participant in your own healing. Please keep in mind this podcast is created for educational purposes only and should never be used as a replacement for medical diagnosis or treatment. I would love for you to follow the show, rate, review, and share because you never know whose life you might change. And of course, keep coming back for more. Liz Wolf, you're back.
I'm back. I was thinking the other day, what does it take? How many appearances before I'm a regular?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I don't know if I have any regulars.
That's on my vision board, is become a regular on Erin's podcast.
Please. It was a year ago. It was last summer that you were on last time. And it was one of the top five most downloaded episodes of the entire year.
That's amazing.
You want to know why? All you got to do is talk about metabolism, muscle, and protein.
And Gwyneth Paltrow.
And Gwyneth Paltrow. People blow their loads. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Metabolism, muscle, and protein. We're going to do it. We're going to do it.
Sweet. All. Can't wait.
Let me introduce folks to you in case they're unfamiliar. Liz Wolf is a NTP. She's a nutritional therapy practitioner. She's a certified personal trainer who encourages women, all women, but especially the 40-ish crowd, to embrace their inner and outer badass using nutrition, supplement, and fitness strategies that serve both their metabolism and their sanity, because we love that. Mm-hmm. Liz is the author of the Wall Street Journal bestseller, Eat the Yolks, which I had that the year that you wrote that, I owned it. So I bought it right away. Very good book. Host of the award-winning Balanced Bites podcast, creator of the Own Your Metabolism and Own Your Fitness programs, and founder of the Ideal Age line of supplements and soon skincare. I'm excited about that. And I can shout out Ideal Age because I'm currently using them because you were kind enough to ship some to me. So we'll talk about that absolutely as we get into this. So like I said, we're going to do metabolism. It's the name of the game. But first, I would like to talk about, this is unscripted and unplanned, but like how you kind of did a Zach Morris timeout on your career a little bit, you know, and focused on family stuff. And then you came back hot to trot and it was like no time had passed. And so this is my perception of it. But I'm curious to hear, is that how it felt like for you?
Yes. Well, man, it was a very bad business decision. If you had run this past a business coach, I'm sure it would have been like, this is a horrible, horrible decision. Mm-hmm. But I've always run things in a way that I can't just come up with content. It has to be something I actually care about and I'm actually interested in, so I can authentically, we love that word, authentically share something interesting. And it just got to the point when I was pregnant with my second, it was a geriatric pregnancy. That was just, we were hearing rumblings of, you know, the virus and all of that. And I just was I had to turn inward. I had to go in and stop with the outward, you know, energy going out. And I did that for most of my pregnancy, the first year, maybe even two of my second daughter's life. And we got through that really crazy time with the world. And I just felt like at a certain point, the pieces came back together and I was ready to start talking again. And so I did. And I think it really, if we learn any business lesson about this at all, it's that cultivate the most loyal, authentic community that you are actually serving. Like, don't go for the numbers. Don't go for whatever. I had people that were like, I'm so glad you're back. Mm-hmm. And if I had not cultivated and if people had not chosen to be part of my community that were just really loyal people and that I wasn't providing value to them, I don't think they would have come back. I think they would have moved on. So that's shout out to my community for that one.
Yeah. I mean, shout out to you because community is co-created. So you're obviously an active participant in that. And it was, you know, people genuinely missed you. I mean, myself included. So I think, you know, we're so terrified of irrelevancy in modern day. And even just like taking a day break or like a week break. So I think it just really speaks to, it's so important to, you know, trust yourself, honor yourself, do what you need. And when you came back, I was like, oh, like, you know, I missed you, but I was like, it's like no time has passed whatsoever. Here she is. Good.
That's what we want. We
picked right up where we left off.
We sure did.
Okay. So metabolism. Okay, let's start by defining it. What even is metabolism?
Oh, this is the best question, because I think I did an informal poll before I put together my metabolism program of my friends, and was just like, what does metabolism mean to you? And they were like, overwhelmingly, it's how many calories you burn, or it's how you lose weight. And it's, and that is such a ubiquitous misconception. Maybe ubiquitous isn't the right word, but your metabolism is the sum total of the energy you produce to run every system in your body. Like, you're blinking, your brain is thinking, you're moving, you're digesting. Everything the body does requires energy. So it's how we run, and it's how we run hopefully well, but we can also do a lot of things to get in the way of that. And I think that's where I got really passionate about, like, how can we stop screwing up our metabolism and let it do what it wants to do, which is provide all of the energy we need for all of these critical bodily systems and functions.
I remember in a college biochem class, we had to memorize like the TCA, like the Krebs cycle, just all the systems, all the processes, all the things.
Yep.
I remember just like pulling all-nighters, like cramming for this stuff. And it's like that huge chart. I don't know what the name of it is, but I can see it still in my brain. It's like, that is your metabolism. It's just like,
oh,
chaos, you know what I mean? Not like very controlled chaos, but it's just like to like the average human brain, a little bit chaotic. And so it's so much more than like calories in, calories out. It's kind of like, that's like Shape Magazine's definition of metabolism, perhaps.
Yes.
But it's really quite complex. So approaching our metabolism, or considering our metabolism as women, and women, you know, 40-ish, as you describe us,
yeah.
Is it different? Like, why is this your cohort all of a sudden?
Well, because everything I do is what I'm actually doing in my own life and trying to figure out for myself. And the last couple of years have been really interesting on this topic, in particular as it pertains to weight loss, because I think that's still where a lot of our thoughts fall when we think about our metabolism. And that was, you know, a relevant thing for me as well. And we can dig into any of that that you want to. But it becomes... For me, it was, I started to get Instagram ads for midlife and perimenopause. And I was like, wait, I just had a baby and now I'm perimenopausal. Like, you're telling me that now I need to start thinking about midlife and perimenopause. And when I finally came around to it and became less offended by it, I was like, well, these are probably things I need to be thinking about. So now I'm on the metabolism train. I'm learning as much as I can about hormone replacement therapy and stuff, so I can be prepared for that when the time comes. But it just becomes, when you realize that you want the next 40 years of your life to look really healthy and really good, and you see your parents and you realize like maybe you want to age better than your parents are aging, you start to think of things that way. And I remember realizing at one point that it's almost as if your 30s are kind of part of your 20s. They're almost an extension of your 20s, where you just don't necessarily have that same awareness of what long-term health really means to your quality of life. And then you edge toward 40 and you're like, it's an entirely different stage. It's an entirely different phase, at least for me. And I started to realize that I wanted the next 40 to look really good, functional, capable, healthy, all of my systems go. And if I didn't bring my attention to that in a really detailed way, I might miss the boat on something and it might be too late.
Do you feel like your goals, priorities, outlook have shifted in the past like 10 years?
Yes. I don't want to like introduce this big wrench into this conversation, but I think I should. Can I do it anyway?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to do it. There was a period probably from about 30 until 37, 38, where, of course, 38, because that's when I had my second kid, where I really was not concerned with what I saw in the mirror. To a point, I'm still not. But I will tell you that after years of just being really concerned with nourishing myself and nothing else, you know, not should I eat this, should I not eat this, there was some of the most powerful years I could have given to myself, is to take that time to not worry about what the scale said, to not worry about anything other than nourishing myself and living a good, fulfilled life. And when I came to that point around 38-ish, I was able to turn my eye to those same concepts of, say, body composition, what the next 10, 20, 30 years are going to look like as far as body composition goes. I was able to turn my thoughts to something like that in a much more curious and detached manner than I had ever been able to do that before. So there was a point where I thought to myself, gosh, and I have this conversation with Michelle Shapiro, our mutual friend, on my podcast, where, you know, I'd been on hormones during my second pregnancy. My body started to feel less like home to me. And I don't think it's for me to tell anybody they should or should not feel comfortable in their bodies, but I can tell you that I started to feel a little bit less comfortable in my body. And so there was a time over the last couple of years where I did turn my attention to how can I sort of cement a healthy body composition for myself for the long haul. I felt it was time to start thinking about those things, because over the course of about 10 years, I did put on about 20 or 30 pounds. I don't care. That's not a value judgment whatsoever, but it was like, okay, what does this look like over the next 10, 20, 30 years? How can I make sure that I'm maintaining the muscle that I need to maintain, not losing it, that I'm putting on the right kind of weight, that I'm not looking at visceral fat, which is associated with multiple, you know, metabolic disorders, that type of thing. So there was a time over the last couple of years that I did turn my attention to intentional weight loss, but in a very curious, detached, not attached to the outcome type of way. So is that a good enough wrench to throw into the conversation right at the beginning?
Well, I'm curious. So for 8 or so years, the priority and the focus was I'm going to nourish my body.
Yep.
Like that's it. Like I'm just going to feed my body and I'm not going to worry beyond.
I'm not going to say I shouldn't eat that. I'm going to have the ice cream. I'm going to have the, you know, the grass-fed meat, the liver pate. I don't know how into liver your people are, but you know, that type of thing. I'm going to eat the most nutrient-dense foods, but I'm also going to eat the most satisfying foods. I'm going to have the ice cream. I'm going to have the sourdough bread. I'm going to do all of those things that make living life so amazing. And I'm not going to quantify it. I'm not going to, you know, put tally marks. I'm not going to worry about the calories. I'm not going to worry about any of it. I'm just going to worry about nourishing myself, body, soul.
And do you think that that is not a long-term forever approach, or was it just not a long-term forever approach for you?
Oh, that's a fantastic question to ask right now, because it is a forever approach. It is more bringing a greater level of detail to it as it pertains to body composition. So the first thing after I shifted away from that was looking at, am I getting enough protein, which I know we're going to talk about today. It was, what macronutrients do I need? And am I giving myself enough of those? And within that context, can I potentially bring my body to a place that I feel more at home than I do right now? And for me, that involved adding muscle, losing fat. I screwed up a couple of times along the way, but again, I wasn't attached to the outcome. I can say, you know, bad Liz, you didn't think about that thing. So now we're going to correct it. So it's still an ongoing journey. But for me, it really was, I feel more comfortable at a different, basically, body composition. And can I get to that point with minimal stress and while still keeping an eye toward nourishment?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, is it fair to say, based on your work and what I've seen from you, you are a very detail-oriented person.
Yes.
You love to collect details. You amass a lot of details before you start making moves. Like your brain probably does really well with like tons of detail. And so this approach, do you feel like this approach works for you because of that? Or do you think that this approach can work for anybody?
Yeah, I think it does. I really think these things are so, so individual. And that's also why some people when I started talking about this stuff, when I started talking about body recomposition, even in the context of, you know, being gentle, being thoughtful, all of that, they had to go. They were like, they were mm-hmm. very triggered by it, and it yep. was not the right content for them. If we're not acknowledging that not just our bio-individuality applies to our physiology, our bodies, and also our mental landscape. Each one of us thinks about things like this differently. And if it doesn't feel good, and if it feels, Michelle, our friend Michelle uses the word urgent a lot, if there's this really fraught sense of urgency around something, then that's not the path for you.
Absolutely. And it's okay for that to change. You know, yes. As somebody, I struggled with eating disorders for 13 years, anorexia and then bulimia. I've been through hell and back with body dysmorphia, with eating disorders, with restriction, mm-hmm. with diet culture. When I started my career, it was very anti-diet culture. I'm a 40-year-old woman now. My career, I've worked with thousands of women. Like, I can evolve and I can change, and my position can evolve and my position can change. And I think it should. And I think we have to permit each other to evolve and to grow and to change based on our life experience. And there is, So it's sort of like this pendulum swing, diet culture. We need the big pendulum swing, anti-diet culture. I think it's completely fine to spotlight and showcase and highlight things that have been underrepresented for a very long time. Important work. But it's also okay for a third path to emerge. You know, it doesn't have to be either or. It probably shouldn't be either or. And so I'm definitely seeing more of this third path where it's like, people that have been through it are coming out being like, okay, like I've like done a lot of healing work, physical body, mental body, emotional body, all of it. And, you know, what if I like move some levers around to just like tweak my body composition? You know, I set a goal a few years ago to build muscle mass, and there's no part of that that has anything to do with the old identity that was saturated in restriction and, you know, mind fuckery around food. Like, none. I can say that honestly. I've got a fun Organifi offer for you, so get ready because I know how much you love these. The Sunrise to Sunset Kit helps transform your entire day in 3 easy steps. A detoxifying morning reset with the green juice, an afternoon energy boost, caffeine-free with the red juice, that's my fave, and a nighttime relaxation tea with the gold, which is like a yummy anti-inflammatory golden milk type situation. All packed with superfoods that your body will love. You get an awesome bundle savings on this kit. If you want to save an additional 20% and get free shipping, head to Organifi.com/funk. That's Organifi.com/FUNK. If you struggle with fatigue, headaches, muscle cramps, you might not be getting enough sodium. This might surprise you, but if you eat a primarily whole foods diet, it shouldn't. According to the FDA, 70% of sodium in the American diet comes from processed foods. So if you reduce or eliminate processed foods from your diet, strong recommend, you may also be reducing essential sodium. Yes, sodium is essential. It's not an optional mineral. Since I eat a whole foods diet, I heavily salt my foods with sea salt. I also drink Element, a tasty and salty electrolyte mix daily. Right now, Element is offering my listeners a free sample pack with any drink mix purchase. That's 8 single serving packets for free with any drink mix purchase. It's a great way to try all the different flavors, and you can get yours at drinkelement.com/funk. This deal is only available through this link, so you have to go to drinkelement.com/FUNK. Element offers a no questions asked refunds, so you can try it totally risk-free. Yeah. So, but also what I've sort of been noticing with this like emergence of like, okay, body composition is back. We can talk about it without doing the dieting and all of that. But like, I'm curious if you've seen this or if you can speak into this. And here's just like another wrench to throw into the conversation. You know, the past decade, we all kind of collectively embraced higher fat, right? Which is amazing. Amazing. I think personally, love that for me. And now with everyone being like, OMG, muscle and protein is so important, I'm seeing a trend towards dropping the fat again. like we went from full fat dairy to fat-free Greek yogurt again.
Yeah.
We went from grass-fed beef to lean cut meats again. And I'm kind of like, you know, no wonder why everyone's so fucking exhausted with nutrition. Like, this is exhausting. And it's like a little bit, it's a little bit giving Jennifer Aniston, like Zone Diet 1999.
Yes. Oh my God. And Barry Sears is back, by the way. He is on Instagram and he follows me.
Shut up. Yes. I didn't know this.
You gotta look.
So
you gotta
it really
look.
Is giving Zone Diet 1999. So there's like a, there is a part of me, like an inner aspect of me that is like raging against this and resisting and just being like, how are we back here? Why do we have to go back here? But, you know, with the work that you're doing with metabolism, with the work that you're doing with macronutrients and building muscle and body composition, just give me your thoughts on this.
Okay. Oh man. Well, there's always going to be a thing that we're back to again, because people still need to make money. They still need to sell something. So they need to package up something that they think. I mean, I'm totally guilty of this. I tried to package this stuff up in a way that was actually helpful. And one of the things I said in my metabolism program is like, I want this to be the last program you ever need. I want you to go through this, get to know your body so well that now you're not on this program forever. It's that you don't need this program or any other forever and ever, because it's really hard for me to reconcile the fact that I'm with you, where I just want people to live their lives, tune into their bodies and, you know, live the best life that they can. But I also like have a business that has to make money. So I'm trying to figure out how to encapsulate empowerment and give that to people and send them on their way, hopefully. So what I have come around to, the actual nitty gritty of my approach, is first of all, maybe I should call the program like how to stop fasting and start eating carbs again, because that's so vital, especially to female metabolism. And of course, the protein's in there too. And what gets interesting and what actually got me to turn my thoughts to this question of fat that you bring up is that I'm looking at the amount of protein that I think we really do need. I think a pound of protein or a gram of protein per pound of body weight, I think that's probably too much for most people. I mean, from the sustainability side, I don't know what your recommendation is for most people. Cool. Is it around there?
Ish, you know, but like, ish. But it's not problematic. It's not harmful to eat that much. It's just hard to get
it's
that much.
It's just hard.
Yeah. Okay.
That's exactly what I'm saying. It's just I am teaching people how to do this. And it's like, you're a second breakfast. You get two breakfasts, lunch and dinner, and then you need protein at snacks. It is like, you are constantly living in service to your protein intake, which can feel difficult for some people.
It's such a funny way to put it. And I'm sure you've seen the memes. It's like hilarious. It's like getting my protein in is like my second full-time job.
Yes, you know,
figuring
exactly.
out how to eat this much protein.
And it is. It totally is. And I recognize that. And I think there's two different ways I walk people through their protein calculations. You can do the, if you really want to be ambitious, you can do that gram per pound of body weight. There's no like scientific literature that I know of that really proves that out. 0.8 per, what is it? 1 point. God, I can't even remember it now. I'm so bad with numbers, but it's all encapsulated in my program. But there is a calculation that generally will bring people closer to like protein at 20 to 25% of total calories versus 30%, which is like the zone thing, you know, that people are back onto again. And then, you know, I do think that's important. And I think one of the challenges here is we are these primal beings with programming that goes back millennia, but we are facing modern life and modern problems that look nothing like anything we faced a bajillion years ago. So we are all just trying to do these calculations in real time, and it's not always going to make sense because of what we're facing. So that's part of it. But I do think starting with protein to ensure your muscles are supported and your structure is supported, because what are we if we don't have our structure in place? And that's really important for the long haul. We know that. And then you look at protein, or then you look at carbs and fat. And this is where it gets difficult. I look at carbohydrate as energy substrate that comes with a ton of bonus material. So not only is glucose our body's preferred fuel and the preferred fuel of the brain, but it also comes with vitamins, plant compounds, micronutrients, all kinds of things that our bodies really need, especially in this modern world. And then you're like, okay, so then fat, we've got to make some room for you, but I'm not 100% sure where you go. And I look at fat as it's structural in some ways, but it's kind of a governing substance. So it helps build your hormones. It helps in communication strategies throughout your body, which is a function of hormones and a function of other bodily systems. So I look at fat in that way. And one of the things I came around to as I was building this program is realizing that it makes sense from an evolutionary standpoint to bring fat into certain boundaries that is less than what people typically eat on a low-carb diet, right? You're on a low-carb diet, you're going to replace most of your carbohydrate with fat. That's just how it goes. Now, from an evolutionary standpoint, are we making olive oil, sesame oil? Like, none of those things are available, right? Now, that said, I don't think an evolutionary paradigm is the perfect place to reason from because, again, like I said before, primal bodies, modern life. But I do think it is an interesting thought experiment to say, okay, what would have been available prior? What was the ancestral diet? What did it look like? And does this jive with bringing fat into certain boundaries that still serve those hormonal governance functions, but does not then take the place of the much maligned carbohydrate and certainly not protein?
Maligned is a good way to put it, maligned, carbohydrates. Yeah. Yeah. Let's go back to that word urgency because I feel urgency in my body when we talk about boundaries with food. So mm-hmm. obviously that's like deep. Like that's like
it is
PTSD type shit right there. And the thought of restricting my fat makes me want to flip a table. Like it's like a very irrational response. Disproportionate to anything, you know? So I think that that's just such a interesting thing to witness in me. And when I started my eating disorder back in 1997, it was low fat all the way. So, you know, like, oof, that's a bad one for me. But, you know, listening to everything that you're saying, it makes sense. And I think about too, and I'm certainly not the only person to talk about it this way, but carbohydrates and fat as kind of levers where like if one's going up, the other one probably has to come down and vice versa. Because if you're just going to go balls to the wall with fat and with carbohydrate, that's like a pretty good recipe for a weight gain. If that's the goal, that's usually how I'm like, you know, telling people like, this is a great way to gain weight, ramp up the carbs, ramp up the fat, and there you go. So it makes sense. And I do think there's a lot of validity to a low carbohydrate diet. I think I have seen a lot of success with that for people. And so I don't think we need to just completely throw that out, but it sounds like a lot of the women that you're interfacing with are still doing the fasting, the carb restriction. And like, we kind of know that doesn't really work for our physiology, you know,
it's extreme. Yes. It's extreme on top of extreme and it's progressive extremes. And it starts with, we're interesting creatures, these millennial creatures, because we straddled that line between low fat and low carb. So we still remember a time when fat was very dangerous. And now people are talking about, no, actually you need to eat. And now people are so enamored of the low carb approach. And I don't even know. Like this is triggering
protein,
to me. Because
just eat protein.
Rabbit starvation. Just that. And that's difficult, but it is, I forgot even where I was going to go with that, but, yes, continue. I'm sorry. I interrupted you.
No, I mean, that is it. Like millennial women listening to this are just like, yup, it's me. So like fat was really, really bad. And we might have, and so when fat became not the villain anymore, we were like, hallelujah,
yes,
bless up. I can eat some avocado. I can cook my eggs in some ghee and like all is going to be fine, you know, like just pure relief. But with that came the low carb, you know, storm. And I think a lot of people are still operating in that paradigm, in that dogma and still afraid of carbs, even though we're like, okay, we know menstruating women, like we shouldn't be afraid of carbohydrates. It's okay. Like there's still that that like a little bit of that fear of like, is it really okay? Is it really okay? And I think probably that's the thing that we're restricting more than we should.
Well, when I tell people that they should eat apples, not should eat apples, I don't tell people what they should or shouldn't eat, but an apple is my go-to. I'm like, what would you feel if I handed you a really big apple? You'd probably be like, I'm not supposed to eat this. Like, I'm not supposed to eat fruit. Because in paleo, where I hail from, it was like, if you're going to eat, you know, carbs, eat sweet potato, which is hilarious because the insulin response from fruit is actually lower than, for example, from your total response to that is going to be lower than it is from starch. But the fruit thing, it was like, I can eat berries for dessert. Is that okay? Wait, can I have berries with my Greek yogurt? I guess I can have honey. Like all of these layers of neuroses around food. And really what I talk about is balance. So low carb is no more balanced than low fat. What I'm talking about is how do we balance these macronutrients? And I hate weighing and measuring. I hate counting. I don't want to do any of that. So that's one of the things that we're working on with my team is how can we give people an idea of what this looks like without them having to get into those details? Because that is toxic for many people. And I don't want to ask people to do that. And generally, I find a lot of programs around metabolism and around specifically body composition. It's like, sorry, you just got to track or you're not going to get anywhere. And I don't buy that. I think that we can crack this code. But I am talking about balance. I'm talking about we need this much protein. We need some carbs and we need fat. We need all of those things. So let's figure out how they all work together. And I think where we get a little wacky, where we get a little, we short out a little bit, is this idea that every meal has to be high fat or every meal has to be high carb. And one of the things I talk about is, I don't know what Barry Sears thinks about this. Maybe we should reach out to him. I think he'd probably be open to a reach out. But does it really have to be every single meal looks the same from this many carbs, this much fat and whatnot? Or can we do, maybe you love a high fat breakfast. Maybe you're like eggs, sausage, bacon all the way. Do that. And then maybe your lunch looks like carb and protein. And then maybe your dinner looks like whatever. Can we cycle through meals in this way and look at, you know, maybe one meal has more carbs, maybe one meal is more focused around fat. And we get all these things that we love, but we don't also remove anything that's important.
Yeah, I think that's pretty bang on. And ultimately, it would be really wonderful to get to a point where it's like, we can just, I was going to say eat more intuitively, but I want to not say that, where we can eat without having to effort and think.
Effort, and yes.
Overthink. You know, just like, I do feel relatively fortunate that that's kind of where I am at now in my eating career is like, I don't put a lot of thought into it. Like I just know what foods I eat. I know what foods I like, and I'm going to do some different things if I have a heavy lift or have a heavy workout, you know, around that. So maybe let's drill into some of that specificity. I know you have some pro tips for getting in protein. So maybe, you know, like setting the bar as high as 1 gram of protein per ideal gram of body weight. Am I saying that right? Ideal pound of body weight. There we go. It's too many things going on. People know what I'm talking about, right? Maybe that is a high bar to set, but at least we're moving in the direction of more protein. You probably need more protein than you think you do, right? Or than you're currently eating. So how do we strategize that without making it a second, you know, job?
A second job. So I think for most people, what we know from the research is that for female athletes, the last time I was on the show, I think we were talking about Athletic Mom, which is / was my app for all of the everyday athlete, moms especially. And just FYI, that app is now called Own Your Fitness because I wanted to expand a little bit outside of just the mom category, not just the mom category, but I realized that, you know, plant moms, dog moms, anybody is welcome into this functional fitness, functional athleticism, you know, world that we're creating. So it's now called Own Your Fitness, and it's a sort of a sister app to Own Your Metabolism. So I should drop that. But if you are an athlete, which I think most of us are, if we are moving heavy things, if we're trying to take care of ourselves, if we want to move well, function well throughout the course of our lives from this day forward, then I think it is probably a good rule of thumb to look at like 1.6 to 1.8 grams of protein per kilogram. And I have no idea. I think that evens out to like 0.8 grams per pound. I did the conversion at one point. Like, can we just give up like the metric system? Can we just all be on the imperial system, please, for the sake of my programs? That would be very helpful. And I think it is important. We know it's important from the scientific literature. And by the way, shout out to Dr. Stacey Sims for all of her work around this stuff. She's going to be on my podcast here pretty soon in the next couple of weeks. She's amazing. But we do know that we need to, you don't have to do anything, but for best results. And I think a lot of us, when we are in that 40-ish age bracket, we don't want to waste any efforts. So we want to make sure that we tailor our nutrition, or at least have some awareness of our nutrition around our workouts, so that the return on investment is good. And I think it is important to bring your thoughts to that, because if you are working out and not fueling it properly, you are actually breaking down instead of building yourself back up. And it's a really easy switch to make. You just make sure that you either have like an essential amino acid supplement during, before, or after your workouts for really easy protein absorption. That's my favorite strategy. Or you get in a protein dense meal, like 25 to 35 grams of protein within maybe an hour of working out. The female anabolic window is smaller, that window that we have to really facilitate muscle recovery, muscle growth, muscle repair. It's smaller than it is for men. And unfortunately, a lot of this research is done on men. But if you can do that, you will be giving yourself so much more mileage out of your workout than if you were just like, I'll eat whenever. And a lot of us don't think of ourselves as athletes, by the way. God, I ramble so much on your podcast because you ask such good questions. But way back in the day, I worked a lot around and with CrossFit people. And one of the things that folks would say is like, well, I'm not an athlete, so I don't need to worry about post-workout nutrition. Actually, you are an athlete. You are a human being moving through the world, and that takes some endurance and athleticism. Maybe even more so if you are living in a body that is not functioning the way you want it to. So we all need to be considering, like, how do we fuel our movement and activity for the best return on investment? And it's not that hard. It's just a matter of either taking a supplement or moving your meals around a little bit to make sure that you get that nutritional intake that is directly related and responsive to the activity that you just did.
I know I've got a lot of you hooked on Ned's Mellow Magnesium Powder because it is my favorite magnesium by a country mile. I take it every single night. In episode 308, we talked about why magnesium is so important, why it's our top recommended supplement here at TFN. Well, I've got some exciting news for you. Ned has dropped the prices on their best-selling products. This includes Mellow Pouches and all of their hemp products. My fave is the De-Stress Blend. They were able to reduce their prices by working directly with more small farmers. This means they get better ingredients, farmers get better pay, and you get better prices. And in addition to that, Ned is increasing their discount for Functional Nutrition Podcast listeners to 20% off with code FUNK. So go to helloned.com/funk or enter code FUNK at checkout. That's helloned.com/FUNK to get 20% off. So you know that I'm a huge fan of changing our thoughts, changing our mind, changing our brain in order to change our health and our life. But what if I told you that there was a way to help yourself in this department with the use of 28 of the most research-backed nootropic ingredients? That's exactly what I've been doing for the past year with a product called Qualia Mind. It's a combo of nootropics, neurovitamins, antioxidants, adaptogens, and amino acids that together support optimal brain function pathways. You can consider it like brain fuel. It gives you more mental clarity, attention, focus, motivation, and drive. See what the best brain fuel formula on earth can do for your mindset. Go to qualialife.com/funk for up to $100 off Qualia Mind. And as a listener of the Functional Nutrition Podcast, use code FUNK at checkout for an additional 15% off any purchase. That's qualialife.com/FUNK and use code FUNK for an additional 15% off to experience life-changing mental performance from Qualia Mind.
So let's talk about some, and yes. let's talk, and it, like, I promised myself I would stop saying this, but guess what? Not today.
Yay.
I am not the body type that puts on muscle very easily. I have to work so hard. So when people are like, I'm afraid of lifting weights because I'm going to get jacked, I'm like, are you Zeus? Like, what's the secret?
Thor, excuse me?
I just need to really effort in that regard. And so I think about how much effort goes into putting on muscle. Like, I drive 25 minutes to meet with my trainer. I have to put in work. Like, there's just a lot to it. And I want to support that as much as I can. Like, what's the point of putting in all that this effort to like not support it with nutrition? So
yes,
talk to me about the specifics of that. So ideal age aminos, is that, can you tell me the exact name? What's the product I have?
So ideal age is the brand, but we only have one product. Not only have one product, we have one amazing product right now. And it's called Daily Aminos Plus. You know what this looks like.
Yeah.
So it's, and I know, you know, you've talked about Keon, which is a great brand. I've taken Body Health in the past. People might know about that brand. They're wonderful as well. I designed Daily Aminos Plus for my needs, but generally for the needs of the woman 35 plus. So we added electrolytes. We added taurine, which is one of my absolute favorite substances on the planet for clean energy, for supporting cardiovascular health, for supporting workout performance. It's good for your eyes. It's good for your brain. It's neuroprotective. It's amazing. And I think that's why we get such great feedback on like the actual overall, you know, like not caffeine energy. It's not like that. It's not the temporary energy burst, but it really is just this clean, wonderful, energetic feeling that I think people get from this that I think goes beyond just the aminos in it. But I created this because I was like, I need to be able to do this without having to bring too much thought to it. I need to be able to recover from my workouts, support my overall protein intake, and just feel really good, prioritize my recovery without having to go out of my way. Because I never know what my day is going to look like. I fit in shit wherever I can fit it in. And there are times when the window that I have is 15 minutes before, like the 30-minute drive to my workout, the workout itself, and the 30-minute drive home. So for me, it's, I am putting the Daily Aminos Plus in my water, and I'm drinking that throughout my workout and finishing it after the fact. And that makes a huge difference. And if I was being really accountable, see, I'm all about shortcuts. This is why I like stuff like this. I'll do the whey protein shake. I'll do all of that stuff. If I was being really accountable, I would plan my workouts around, you know, the next really protein-rich meal. But that's not realistic for me. And I don't think it's realistic for a lot of us.
Come on. I like would just, no, it's too much for me. Too much to think about. I'm going to like rapid fire questions at you right now.
Yeah.
Specific to protein intake.
Okay. You're like, answer a question with a direct answer, Liz.
You do not need to rush through these. I have follow-up cues.
Okay.
Okay.
You have said, I don't have a hard stop, just so you know.
Okay, great. I do. It's like, I gotta go.
I'm done with you.
Wrap it up. Okay. Amino acids, you said before, during, or after your workout. So it doesn't matter. Is there a specific window that like when you say before, like right before? I'm just anticipating questions that people will have right now.
Yes. I love it. I think immediately before. So you drink
like on your way to the gym.
On your way to the gym. During is my favorite because it supports the actual like physiological processes that are occurring as you exercise. There is a direct increase in your body's demand for building blocks, aka amino acids, which are the building blocks of protein, the protein that we eat and the protein that our body is composed of. There's a direct increase in our body's demand for these building blocks when we are working out. So that's why I love to do it. And also I suck at being accountable to my hydration. But I will drink water during a workout. So I know if I plan to do it that way, I put the scoop in my shaker bottle on the way, fill it up with water when I get there and drink during perfection or immediately after because you are in that anabolic window. You're in that window of increased demand for the building blocks for recovery. So that's why I think it's so ideal. I also love, and it doesn't have to be my aminos, it can be any aminos. I love it if you are planning on working out fasted in the morning. I do think it is so, so important to get a breakfast in within like 30 to 45 minutes of waking up, but that's really difficult for some people as well. And I get it. So I think first thing in the morning when you wake up, especially if you're going to work out fasted or you're not going to get some protein in quickly, it works beautifully then as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point because some people just can't, I can't stomach a meal before exercise. Like yeah. I just, my GI tube will not allow for that. I can yeah. do like a bar, you know, but so I'm always making sure to do aminos if I'm working out in the morning, just so it's, I'm not, you know, like raw dogging my workouts.
Oh my God. I love all of your words.
Where do they come from? I don't know.
I don't even know.
Okay. And for what type of exercise? Does this apply to all exercise, like hot yoga or just lifting, like running, cycling? That's a new one. That's a new one.
It's like a pickleballing. Bicycling. Yeah, exactly. There's something new called fouling. It's like bowling/football/something else. It's all very interesting. New sports.
Do you have aminos for fouling?
You do. Absolutely. Anytime you're swinging your arm, you know, in that particular plane of, yeah, you need aminos. Yes, absolutely. I've said in the past, and this is not entirely scientific, but anytime you're like above baseline, imagine that your body is looking for more building blocks. Mm-hmm. Certainly when you are fasted, that is important. So really, I don't care what kind of workout it is. Strength, if you're wanting to build muscle, it is essential. See what I did there? But anytime you're working above baseline, it's a wonderful tool. There are people that come to me and they're like, I need to economize. I can't just be like taking two scoops a day because it's a supplement. It costs money. So what I tell them is take it during your workouts, in particular, the workouts that you're worried about building muscle or that you are lifting or whatever. That's when it's going to be most important. That and especially long duration cardio, which is not my favorite from a metabolic perspective. But anytime that you are really taxing your system with those types of workouts, it's an amazing tool.
And above baseline.
Yeah.
I would also throw chronic illness into that mix.
Yeah.
The body really kind of needs a surplus of energy in order to do real big healing. And I have found that, you know, before aminos were hot to trot on the, like they're, you know, they're having a moment right now.
Oh, yeah.
Like we really understand why they're so important and people are looking for, you know, variety in their supplementation. So that's why your supplement is so wonderful. But before then you just like kind of took them in pill form, right?
Yeah.
And it was like through supplement companies. And, but that could be a real needle mover for somebody struggling with like significant chronic illness because it just gave them that surplus of energy. It gave them that, you know, non-caffeinated energy boost that you were referring to. So that yeah. might be something to try if somebody's listening and maybe this is not the season of their life where they're exercising a lot or trying to build muscle, but maybe they're just trying to recover from something. This might be a useful tool for that as well.
Yes, absolutely. And the other thing is if my supplement reached only people above the age of 60, I would be happy. This is something I have my parents on. This is something I really encourage people to get their older loved ones on. We have really good solid scientific literature on the benefits of essential amino acid supplements for the elderly and for people, I don't want to say elderly, but in that age bracket, in our parents' age brackets, it is really a phenomenal supplement if you can get them to take it.
Is this part of our, or does it count toward our overall protein needs?
Okay. So this is an interesting question. I am not allowed to postulate an equivalency, I don't think. I'm still learning. I know the guys at Keon and the folks at Body Health probably have this down to a science, but since I am newer to the supplement world, I'm very, very careful about this stuff. To my knowledge, I'm not allowed to say this is the same as this much protein from a chicken breast. I personally look at it as extra, but in my life, this is not an official statement from Ideal Age or any of its subsidiaries, I would look at it as maybe a meal's worth of protein replacement. I think Angelo from Keon has made statements about that in the past on other podcasts. I don't know if I'm safe to say the same type of thing, but it does provide plenty of building blocks that I think would be analogous to something like that.
And so speaking of protein intake and protein needs, what are your I don't know if we want to call them hacks, but your pro tips for getting in outside of leveraging aminos.
Yeah.
What other ways are you getting food-based protein in?
Okay. So this, I have a new thing that I'm going to put together, a little mini course called How to Make Your Protein Work for You. And this is basically the nature of the question is how do we hack this? And how do we also make the protein that we take in work for us so that we're not just eating it and then not actually utilizing it the way we want to. So obviously, like you said, the aminos. I'm also a big fan of protein shakes. I love a whey protein shake, which I know is feels scary for folks, especially if they can't tolerate dairy. But a protein shake is a functional, easy way to boost your protein intake during the course of the day that offers much more protein than, say, a beef stick. I personally don't love the taste of like beef protein isolate and stuff like that. It's a little foamy for me, which is a little yucky.
That's because I can't do whey, so that's like my alternative, like my only alternative, really. And I just, this is a pro tip in case anybody else is foaming up, foaming at the mouth. I do my whole shebang. I blend everything and then I just add it at the end and I do a little blend and then that's it. If you blend it too much, it gets very foamy.
Very, just very coagulated, foamy. Yes. But that is a phenomenal tip. Beefy, very beefy. So there's that. A pro tip that I think we should probably throw out there is that when we're talking about supporting our structure and muscle mass, we are not talking about collagen protein. So that stuff is important. It provides amino acids that are wonderful functional cofactors for other things. But if you're adding a scoop of collagen to your coffee, I would say don't count that towards your daily protein intake. That's sort of extra. It's not supporting the things that maybe we want it to support. So protein shakes, aminos, and also, again, carbs. We really do benefit from carbohydrate intake in our body's ability to process protein. That has to do with how we're generating energy and how we are sparing other sources of energy as well. So the physiology around that, I'm still kind of working on it, but I'm not sure we can really get around that, especially as women in this age bracket. We actually need carbohydrates in order to properly utilize our protein.
How much?
How much carbohydrates or how much protein?
How much carbohydrates?
Look, this can feel a little scary. If I were to weigh out my diet right now, I'm probably at about 40 to 50% of calories from carbohydrates. So half of my calories come from carbs. I feel better than I've ever felt, at least in recent memory. In the last decade of my life, I feel better than I've ever felt. And that can feel scary for folks. So you really do have to start from where you're at and build up. And just see how you feel and see how you do with it. I'm planning on creating some stuff on helping people start to eat carbs again, how to stop fasting and eat carbs again. And there are different ways that you can support your blood sugar, chromium. There are a couple of different, glucose supplements that you can use to help with your glucose, balance your glucose response. But really, you have to figure out where you're at in general, maybe not nickel and diming your carb intake, but figure out where you're at and see if you can't push that up a little bit. Add an apple, see how you do with that. Add a potato, see how you do with that. See how you feel, tune into that. And also notice how you recover better. Stack your carbohydrates around your workouts. See if you recover better from there. I have noticed that I tend to recover better and feel better when I have some carbohydrates within 30 minutes to an hour of a workout. And that has to do with not just energy, but also protein synthesis.
I am really curious because you just mentioned blood sugar. So we all know that that's important. I'm going to ask you, I have my own opinions on it.
I want your opinions too.
I'm curious of yours. I will share mine after I ask you.
Okay.
Thoughts on CGMs? Like, have we taken it too far? Like, yes. We know. It's important and it matters. Does everybody need to be walking around with a CGM attached to their arm all day long?
Fuck no. This is driving me nuts. And I, like you said at the beginning, I like data. I like, you okay there?
I'm just like drooling down my face.
Erin's staying very hydrated, and so is the front of her shirt.
Hydrated.
Yeah. What were we just talking about? Oh my God.
Yes. CGMs.
CGMs. Okay. I like data. I would find that interesting, but I have had people come to me literally in tears because their blood sugar went up. And I'm like, your blood sugar is supposed to go up. When you eat carbohydrate, your blood sugar is supposed to go up. That's part of the signal to your body that they need to deploy insulin to bring those carbohydrates into your cells. And it becomes so scary for people. And I think at a certain point, we're buying into the next biohack, the next quantifier, when we don't really have a solid idea of what makes us feel best in the first place. It's just adding more noise.
Yeah, I mean, I fully agree. And it's like, holy hypervigilance, Batman. You know, yes. It's not for everybody. You know, everyone is really so different. And so for some people, these tools are amazing and incredible support systems. Personally, I used one for 2 months. I gleaned some good information and then I moved on. You know, I was able to move on with my life. It's not something that I need to go back to, you know, and just continue to use all of the time. And I just find that people are so keyed into every up, down, left, right that's going on that they're just like hyper fixated, hyper focused, hyper vigilant. And obviously, that's not putting us in a state of mind to regulate our digestion or our blood sugar for that matter, because of course
100%.
Blood sugar regulation is more than just how many carbs are you eating at each meal.
Well, and so is satiety. I ran across some interesting research, something like out of Australia, and it's something about a satiety score or a satiety scale. And they did not evaluate a whole lot of foods, but what they did find was that some of the most satiating foods, which means foods that make you feel full and satisfied for a longer period of time, were white potatoes. They were off the charts. And I have no idea why. I don't think they know why, or I don't think they postulated any reason why that might be. But there's something about potatoes that is incredibly satiating. Apples were also way up there, on par with actual protein. So maybe our blood sugar goes up, but how satiated are we? There are a million other questions that we need to be asking before we make a decision based on that data.
Yeah. And it's like, it's one, exactly. And it's one piece of data. One piece of data. And I fully recognize that the field of nutrition, we are kind of obsessed with exactness and certainty and formulaic approaches. And I think that there's some value to that. And I think some people do really, really, really well with that. And if the formula works for you, that's amazing, you know? But it's like being in this game for a long time and working with a lot of people, there are just so many unseen forces behind someone's health, behind someone's blood sugar regulation, behind someone's gut health, immune system function. And I love a good magical mystery tour. Like let's let the mystery unfold. Like let's try some stuff and see what happens and see how our body responds. And so many truths can coexist at once. And so many seemingly opposing truths can coexist at once. And we're trying to make something that is very complex and nuanced be so exact and so just like 1 + 1 = 2. And it doesn't always pan out that way, which I understand is frustrating and maddening for the average person, but like that's kind of the reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And from day to day and moment to moment, these things change too. So we're just trying so hard to standardize something for ourselves that we might just have to get comfortable with that gray area.
Yeah. And it's hard, you know, and people don't love a gray area. They really don't. No, they don't. Our brains don't love a gray area, but
correct.
It's kind of important. All right, Liz Wolf, thank you very much for this conversation. Always enjoyable. You always bring such a, I don't know.
Rambling.
You take a very diplomatic approach to things too. You know, do you feel that's true about yourself?
I do. I'm trying to be less diplomatic because I think it comes down to people pleasing in some way.
That's actually not a compliment. I'm working on this.
It's hard though. It's hard. And there are two things can be true at the same time. I need to be meaner and I'm also really good at being nice. But I think to get the word out on some of these things, like women, you need to eat your carbs, like metabolism is more than just the calories you burn. I think I might have to harness, you know, a little less diplomacy and a little more, I don't know, unchecked aggression or something.
Oh, I love unchecked aggression. It's my personal specialty.
That's your personal brand.
Yeah, it is. All right. This was super helpful. We'll link up to all of your work and all of the programs and all of the things and Ideal Age. When can we expect more coming from Ideal Age in terms of supplements and skincare?
Ooh, that is a whole discussion. Right now, I'm looking at skincare, and what I'm looking at is not releasing an entire skincare line. I think there is plenty of skincare out there that is amazing. What I'm focusing on is homing in on some really exciting ingredients and hopefully putting together a couple of products that are like basically boosters for your current routine. It's like, keep doing what you're doing, but add this because you're going to get something out of it that is nowhere else. So right now I'm looking at I'm not going to give away too many details, but hopefully in the next couple of months, I will have more information on that. I'm really excited about it.
This is very exciting. Yeah. And for those who have not followed Liz's entire career, she's been in skin for a minute. Like, that's your jump off, really. So
yes, yes. It's interesting now that every dermatologist and esthetician is a famous dermatological TikToker type person. So I feel like you've got to do a little bit more consulting and a little bit more than maybe before. But I've got some really amazing estheticians that I'm consulting with just to get the go ahead. But it should be really awesome.
Well, this is all very exciting. Thank you for your time. Thanks for coming on. I know everybody will love this conversation. So I appreciate you.
Thank you. I appreciate you too.
Thanks for joining me for this episode of the Functional Nutrition Podcast. If you got something from today's show, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, share with a friend, and keep coming back for more. Take care of you.